Hello, and welcome to Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. I'm your host, Robert Washburn. This program is coming to you from the Williams Treaty Territory and Northumberland 89.7 FM. For the next 30 minutes, we will bring you important stories and issues facing Indigenous and non-Indigenous people living here in Northumberland County and across the country. It is your chance to become better informed, more engaged, and empowered as we all move together on the path to reconciliation. So join us for the next step on this journey. I am so pleased to be talking once again with Tainar Simpson, Chief of the First Nation in Alderville. Good to see you again.
Great to see you, Robert. Always happy to be here.
You were at a historic meeting of the Anishinaabeg Grand Council in Sudbury, where many important things happened. Let's start with the politics. Tell us what happened.
We changed our format for this election period. Previously, we had four and a half deputy grand chiefs for each region and one grand chief. We changed it to one grand chief and one deputy grand chief. So now this is a three-year term, and we did elect a new Anishinaabeg Nation grand chief, and we're all very happy with her. She's been a chief of Chagging First Nation for the past 10 years, and the work that she's done has been incredible.
This was very significant in another way. I understand you did it in a very traditional voting method. Can you tell us a bit about that and why that was significant?
Yes. So it's been the first, we call it a stand-up election. And in previous years, we hadn't done it, mostly because of COVID. But when you have a stand-up election, the candidates that were nominated previously will stand up and they will face a wall away from the rest of the chiefs. And then the chiefs will walk in their circle. So you always go clockwise, and the chiefs will stand behind their candidate. And usually the nominators will be the first ones to stand behind, but really you just want to make sure you stand behind. And then once everyone is standing, the person who will be dropped off, so the person with the lowest number of votes will turn around and they will look at their chiefs, and then they'll say a few words, and then everyone that was in that group will go and stand behind their next candidate until there's only one candidate standing, and everyone's standing behind that candidate. And then that person, the newly elected grand chief, would turn around, look at everyone and address them for the first time as their chief.
Why is it so important to use that method?
Well, the big thing is that it's out in the open. Everyone who's in attendance at the assembly can see where the chief stands. There's no secret ballots. There's no saying like, okay, this is the numbers, but no one knows who they are. It's quite up front and center. So it's just a way of having full disclosure and transparency within the voting process. I should mention that it's not at that point that the person becomes a chief. We had a blanketing ceremony that was for the first time they'd ever done it in Anishinaabeg Nation elections. So it was just a wonderful, powerful ceremony where we had to transfer from the previous grand chief to the new grand chief.
I also understand too that there was a traditional ceremony in preparation before the vote.
Yes. So I was quite taken with how much ceremony was involved and imbued in all aspects of the assembly. Every day we open up with prayers and discussions, and then there's the nomination process that goes ahead, and everyone has a chance to nominate someone. So what you would do is there's a talking stick as well as the microphone. You have both of them and you pass them down. And if you want to nominate someone, you would take the microphone and say that you would like to nominate a certain candidate, at which point you take your tobacco that you've prepared and you hand it to your nominee. And if they accept that nomination, they will take the tobacco and passing tobacco in this way is a contractual obligation. That's the way we make our decision. So if someone accepts that tobacco, they're obligated to whatever they were asked to do.
Sounds quite amazing.
Absolutely. I should let it be known that this is part of rediscovering our ways. I was talking with some of the chiefs who have been around for a long time. And in the 80s, it was much more a corporate dynamic. There wasn't the medicines. There wasn't the ceremony. And you might be hard pressed to tell that you were even electing a grand chief or a national chief or a regional chief, because it was in such the, the white colonial settler way of doing business that we had been assimilated into. So it wasn't until we started getting people with the traditional knowledge that these medicines came back. And every time it seems like we're taking an additional step forward. So what we did this time had never been done before.
Tell us about this new Grand Chief. Who is she, and why is she a good selection?
Well, Linda DeBasaghi is an incredible individual. She reached out to me. We had a very good conversation. Her priorities are our priorities. She's got a very positive way of talking and discussing. She really puts you at ease when you're in her presence, and she is all about unity. The whole theme of this grand assembly was unity, saying, like, you know, we know that we're fighting amongst ourselves in a lot of ways, but let's put that aside. Let's lift each other up. Let's all work together for these hard issues that we got in front of us. If we're fighting amongst ourselves, we're not going to be at our best to be able to take on these big issues. So it was really nice to see this theme, and this should trickle down to the communities. A lot of us, there's mudslinging all over, and we need to end that. We need to move forward together in a positive way.
You mentioned priorities and spoke about them generally, but what are some of the issues that she wants to tackle during her tenure?
Well, some of the big ones are what I've mentioned before on this podcast. There's policing, there's the second generation cutoff rule, there's Bill C-53 with the Métis Nation of Ontario. So those things all align with what we are doing right now, and we're just happy to be behind her now.
There was also a really interesting angle on these elections with a local touch. Marsha Smoke was elected as the Southeast Regional Chief. Tell us a bit about her.
Marsha Smoke is a wonderful community member. She has been working for Indigenous people, I think, since the 80s. She's been in a top-level positions, chiefs of working for chiefs as the chief of staff. She's been assistant to many of the great chiefs of our time. She has started up much programming. She has ceremonies that she does in Port Hope over on September 30th. So she's someone that's been doing this for a long time, and she has the mindset and basically the time to be able to handle this role. So often what happens is a sitting chief will take on the role, but they don't have the time to dedicate towards this. I was thinking about, hey, would I have time to do it? And I just don't. There's just not enough time in a chief's schedule. So when you can have someone like Marsha Smoke, who knows exactly what she's doing, has been there, done that, and is able to step into this role, then we can all just say, this is great that someone's willing to do this. And it's a volunteer position too. So to be able to do that, it speaks volumes to her character.
I know there was a lot going on at the meeting, but I know that you were also directly involved in some of the motions that were being made. Can you tell us a bit about what you brought forward?
Yes. So there was about, I'm going to say, six or seven motions over the 2 days that we were in. And I was pushing forward a motion that I felt like it was a long time coming for us. So the official name of the resolution was building capacity in remote technologies and expertise to support the Anishinaabeg First Nations. So this is mainly like remote technologies like GPR and software to be able to understand and disseminate or arrange the data so that First Nations are better able to catalog and prioritize different sites. So this is great for any First Nation that is adjacent to or has an old Indian residential school on their property. So it's something that's vastly needed. There's no core funding in First Nations budgets for this. People, First Nations don't have this disposable funds to be able to do this themselves. So in this way, we're able to support that technology, not not every First Nation needs it. And then we would just buy certain ones and have them go around. But it's building a capacity. And once the residential schools missing and children are found in the unmarked burials, there's many more uses for this technology. We could talk about lands and housing, public works, farming, mining, maybe not us doing the mining, but being able to understand where these mining claims are and how they affect us on the land. So it's a tool in our toolbox that is going to be with us for a long time to come.
Sounds so fascinating, but maybe not everybody's familiar with the kinds of technology that you were talking about. You mentioned GPR. Just for those who are not aware, what does that stand for?
That's ground penetrating radar. And this is how you identify disturbances in the ground that could be unmarked burials. So you need to know where the potential burials are. And this is a great way of identifying them. So there's different types of GPR. On our site, we've used a few different kinds, and we have to go over several times just to make sure that what we're looking at is really what we're looking at, because some go to different depths, some look for different things, and you need to make sure you cross. So you're going up and down, say vertically, and then you also have to go horizontally to get that grid patterning. So these are expensive pieces of material. Plus you need to have the technicians to be able to do it. So it's not, it's an involved process that most First Nations wouldn't be able to figure out on their own.
What else was decided during the Grand Council meeting that would be significant that we should talk about?
Well, there was, there's, policing initiatives, basically just, you know, we need to keep the pressure on to get, the proper representation that we need in our communities. And, we also updated our governance manual. So I'm going to say this is probably the biggest, resolution that we passed, and it was, updating our governance manual that hadn't really been updated since the beginning. And it was more just, this is how things get done. But with the new one, we identified, the procedures and processes for, you know, moving on into the future. So a lot of these things weren't addressed in the previous governance manual, and we kind of just were trying to work it out. And this is a way of getting these procedures down in stone so that we know how we're moving forward.
Thanks for talking to us about the Grand Council meeting. Please stay tuned to hear more conversations towards reconciliation with Tainar Simpson. This is Northumberland 89.7 FM, your local source for news and information. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I hope you're enjoying our chat today. I'm Robert Washburn, and I'm here with Tainar Simpson, the chief of Alderville First Nations. We are so glad you're joining us. Welcome back. I hope you're enjoying our chat today. I'm Robert Washburn, and I'm here with Tainar Simpson, the chief of Alderville First Nations. We are so glad you're joining us. You have another meeting coming up that is significant. You are looking to get approval to extend the role of an independent special interlocutor for missing children and unmarked graves and burial sites that are associated with residential schools. Can you tell us about this meeting and what you hope to achieve under that umbrella?
Yes. So this past week, I was at the Anishinaabeg Nation Grand Council Assembly in Sudbury. This coming week, I'll be in Six Nations for the Chiefs of Ontario regional chief elections. And so whereas last week it was the 39 Anishinaabeg Nation First Nations, this is all 100 plus Ontario First Nations getting together, having our election. And one of the resolutions I'm pushing forward is the extension of the special interlocutor for missing children. So this is something that's been going on for the past 2 years. And Kimberly Murray has done a really good job of uncovering a lot of the issues. She's been touring the country to just ask the right questions to figure out what exactly we need to do going forward. And she has a very specific mandate, but it was unfortunately only 2 years long. And now we know that we're coming to the end of the 2 years, and we feel like there's still more work for her to do. So we are passing a resolution to put pressure on the government to extend her period for at least a year.
Can you tell us about Kimberly Murray in a little more detail? Why is she qualified to do this work?
Well, she's got the education to do it. She had been working with the Indigenous Secretariat in I think it was around Six Nations, but she's been working with the Haudenosaunee for a while now. I know there's the Mohawk Industrial Residential School that they had there. And so she's been doing this work for a while, and we were looking for someone that fit her her experience basket, basically, and someone that could deal with the First Nation, someone that could handle the government, someone that was able to listen to what the First Nations were saying. So you have to have a very specific character to be able to handle all of these different stakeholders, and she fit the bill quite well.
The mandate had already been extended to this past fall. What are you looking for within your motion in terms of an extension?
I believe it's for 1 year that we're looking for. And then if I think if there's more time that's required, we would look to extend that again. I think the main thing to understand is that this shouldn't have just been a one and done. She should really do her work until she feels like she's done all the research to put forward the most thorough final report that she can.
Do you anticipate much of a debate on your motion?
I really don't. We all know that residential schools and getting to the truth and the missing children is probably one of the most paramount issues facing our nations today. So there might be maybe some issues on the wording, or maybe saying we don't want 1 year, we want an extra 2 years. So it's going to be just figuring out the wording, and oftentimes that's all that they're looking to ask, or they might ask a question about something that maybe isn't quite clear, and then we can always update that wording for it. But I don't see any opposition to the general idea of the extension.
What's your sense of it going forward once this decision gets made?
Okay, I think ideally the resolution would pass, and that would give the Ontario Regional Chief a chance to bring that to the entire Assembly of First Nations, to the National Chief, Cindy Woodhouse. And if all of the other regional chiefs and regions have decided that this is what they want to do, then Cindy Woodhouse, as the National Chief, could go to the federal government and say, we have unanimity that we would like to extend the mandate of the special interlocutor. So that's in a perfect world. Well, actually, in a perfect world, the government would say, hey, yes, you're right, we're going to do it. Someone's going to be taking that message to the government. And if it's just the Ontario Regional Chief going to the government and saying, Ontario chiefs have propose this or demand this, that works too.
Thank you for talking to us about that, and good luck.
Oh, thank you.
We've come to the part of the interview that I enjoy, and I know you do too, and that's our public service announcements. What's going on in Alderville over the next couple of weeks?
Well, I think that the big one is our powwow coming up, which is it's always the second weekend in July. But now since the end of the month kind of starts on a weekend, we want to just let everyone know that indeed it is July 13th and 14th is the powwow. So everyone is welcome. I just want to express this as much as I can. If you've never been to a powwow before, if you're new to Canada or you've been in Canada for your whole life and you've never gone to a powwow, I just want to extend that invite to everybody. It's we don't judge. We want every person there and just to enjoy our culture, our dancing, our singing, and really just have a good time, visit the vendors, eat the great food. So I hope to see everyone there. Let's see what else coming up in June 19th. Every full moon, we have what's called the Woman's Full Moon Ceremony. So if you're a member of Alderville, Anishinaabe Kwe, female member, you are always invited to the full moon ceremony. We ask that you would wear a ribbon skirt and come in a good way and just enjoy some of the traditions of our people. And on June 17th, there's going to be traditional teachings. We're starting this up, and that's going to be 6 to 8 p.m., I believe, at the Hilltop Building. And we also have several days in June and July where we're going to be making our regalia. So if you don't have regalia for the powwow and you want to create some, just please contact Corinne Smoke, and there's going to be regular, probably weekly regalia making sessions up at Hilltop. And of course, coming up National Indigenous Day, June 21st, we are going to be starting our event at 2 p.m. At the community center. So we hope to see all of our members out as well too. And of course, if you're just a member of the larger community, we ask that you maybe participate as well and enjoy National Indigenous Day with us. And that's the main events that we have going on in Alderville for the next month.
Leonard Simpson, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, always a pleasure. Thank you.
I want to thank Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson for talking to me today. I want to thank you for joining our conversation, and I hope you enjoyed this time to learn more about what's going on, the stories and issues facing Indigenous people living in Northumberland and elsewhere. That's all for this week. I'm Robert Washburn. Join us again next time for Conversations Towards Reconciliation with Tainar Simpson.